So this, continuing the study of Rav Kook's book, Oros HaTshuva, The Lights of Tshuva. As we've learned, Rav Kook was a poet. He was a man of great emotion, of great feeling, of soaring thoughts. This chapter, the fourth chapter, Rav Kook talks about HaTshuva HaPratis HaYechidis, the tshuva of an individual, the tshuva haklalis, and the general tshuva, hatziburis, of a community, haolamis, of the whole world, baolam, in the world at large, uveknesses Yisrael, and amongst the Jewish people. Rav Kook is going to teach us that the truth is what is happening in a micro sense is also occurring in a macro sense. The process of tshuva, the process of an individual coming to God and coming closer to the Almighty and serving God, that's really the process of the whole world. The whole world, as it's improving, as it's developing, whether it's developing in nature or in science or in technology, or in morality. The world is improving morally. Rav Kook is an eternal optimist. He looks at the world, he says, you know what, the world is getting better. People are becoming more moral. They're more attuned to moral argumentation than they were years and years ago. People are becoming more sensitive. The world, cultures, societies are much more insistent or trying their best to be right, to be righteous in a true sense of the word. The world is improving. The world is returning to God. And that process of returning to God, that's the same process that's happening to each individual. The same internal drive that an individual has that pulls an individual back. He wants to be closer to God. He wants to serve God. He wants to fulfill the mitzvot. He wants to learn Torah. That same internal drive is just a small fraction of a universal drive that fills and animates the entire Jewish people, and even broader, it fills and animates the whole world. The whole world is inspired and seeking to return to God because of the innate force of tshuva. And so, who are we to step away from that force? The whole world is part of it. Dare we stand aside and let it go on without us jumping in and joining it? So that's his general argument. And let's see what he says in particular. Rav Kook begins letter Aleph. Shotfim heim zirmei hatshuva. The flows of tshuva, Rav Kook says, flow. They're flowing. Hapratis vahaklalis, the individual tshuva, and the communal tshuva. Dimyonam, what they resemble, is kigalhei shal havos, like the waves of the rays of the sun, shal guf hashevesh, that are on the face of the sun. Asher b'milchemes ad heim mispartzim v'olim, that in eternal struggle, in an eternal battle, they are bursting forth and rising. V'heim nosnim chayim, and these rays of sun give life, Lahamon olamim, to enormous amounts of worlds, uliyitzurim ein sfuros, and you can't even count how many creatures are dependent on this battle. Ein koach, we don't have the ability, liklotus hahamon harav, to fully comprehend, to fully grasp the enormous amounts, so hatzvaim harabim, of the many colors, Asher l'shemesh hagdola hazos hamira l'olamim kulam shemesh hatshuva. We can't even begin to comprehend how many colors, how many rays, how many explosions of energy are coming out of this sun, the sun of tshuva, which gives life to the whole world. Mipnei shitfam v'ribuyam. We can't comprehend this because they're so fast, they're so many. Mipnei mihirusam aniflaah, their tremendous speed. Mipnei shehim ba'im mimakor hachayim ba'atzman. Because they come from the very source of life, Shahazman ba'atzmo, that time, hu rak echad me'atavniyos ha-metzumtzamo shelo. Time is one of the constricted forms that this source fills. This source is before time. The Gemara tells us Tshuva was created before the creation of the world. Before time, there's a force which is higher than time, which is greater than time. Time just is a means in which this force is dressed. This force limits itself within time, but it is more than time. Just like I might limit myself to saying a particular sentence, but the truth is, in my mind, there's much more than just this sentence. My mind has hundreds of sentences about a particular topic, but I limit myself into one sentence. That sentence is a fraction of the real thing. Time is a fraction of the real essence of life. The essence of life, God is above time. God created time. God reveals himself in the vehicle of time. Time hides God, and through hiding God allows for some limited revelation of God. But that's only a fraction of God himself. And Tshuva is from God himself. The Gemara says that Hezekiah HaMelech's son, Menashe, performed many misdeeds. So many misdeeds, he was such a great idol worshiper, that the angels in heaven said there's no room for Menashe to ever return. So what did God do? He dug a hole underneath his throne of glory to let Menashe slip in without the angels noticing, that Menashe could come back to God. And then what the Gemara is teaching us is that the ability of Tshuva is a tremendous ability. It's beyond all limits. It's from that which is before the world. In our world is a world of limits. But Tshuva comes from before the world. The force of Tshuva, that innate force that pulls us back, that's a vitality, a strength, a life that's so vibrant, it's stronger than any life we know. Think of the most vibrant life, of the most vigorous individual, the strongest force. Tshuva is stronger than that. Tshuva comes from God himself. Tshuva comes from before any limitations. Tshuva is unlimited life, unlimited vitality. Says Rav Kook, as powerful as the rays of the sun are, it's nothing like the rays of the sun of Tshuva. The force of Tshuva is an all-powerful, all-encompassing force. Haneshama hayichidis vatziburis. The individual's soul and a community's soul. Haolamis, the soul of the world. Ha'olmei haolamis, and the soul of eternity. Kilvi'a no ra'ah, so ekes b'chavaleha. Like a frightening young lion, the soul screams in pain, the tikkun gamur, for total perfection. Deep within the soul, truth is within you, within the world, within the cosmos. Rav Kook is teaching there is a force, there is an innate soul, and that soul is screaming for perfection, for moral perfection, for all types of perfection. It's screaming for improvement and for progress and for development. And that inner call is the call of Tshuva. When we look around us and we see the way the whole world is looking to advance, our cook is teaching, we should see in that tremendous desire for advance a collective scream. Screaming, we want to come back to perfection. We want to grow. We want to reach a higher level. That's the force of Tshuva. Limitsiusa idealis. It's a cry for the ideal creation. And the truth is, it's a scream, and a scream by definition is painful. The call to tshuva, a person's innate soul that calls on us to do tshuva, that's a painful call. It's painful to confront tshuva, to confront the fact that we have to admit that we're wrong, and we've sinned, and we are guilty. It's painful. It's a tremendous pain involved in tshuva. And says Rav Kook, Anu chashim es hamach ovim, we feel the pain, v'heim mimarkim osanu, and they purify us. These pains purify us, כמלח זה שממתיקס הבשר, like salt that sweetens meat. You can't eat meat raw without any seasoning. It doesn't taste good. But try just eating the seasoning. It also doesn't taste good. We need to put a little seasoning, even though that is innately, essentially uncomfortable and unpleasant. But by putting a little seasoning into the meat, and thus tempering the taste of the meat, then the meat becomes delicious, it becomes favorable. Says Rav Kook, the process of tshuva is a process of tremendous pain. But a person has to remember, though, that this pain has a tremendous, it has phenomenal benefits. This pain is wiping away the sin. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, I've mentioned it here before, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal used to give every year a drasha, a great lecture about the laws of tshuva, about the Rambam's laws of tshuva, Hilchos tshuva. Later, there was a fellow, his name was Pinchas Peli, a journalist. He used to write up the lectures in his newspaper. And then he collected a group of them and he published it, called Al HaTshuva, and then translated into English, and the title is On Repentance. In the last lecture of that collection, on Al HaTshuva, Rav Soloveitchik points out that he thinks that the principle of tshuva is really predicated on several halachic concepts. Number one, it's predicated on the halachic concept of mashehu. In halacha, a little bit matters. Unlike secular society, not always, but unlike many in secular society who only admire the grandiose and the great and the many, in halacha sometimes a fraction, a tiny amount, has great significance. Take chametz. Based on the rabbinic law, if there's a fraction of chametz, even one millionth in an entire mixture, the entire mixture is prohibited because of the chametz that's within it. In halacha, sometimes small amounts mean a great deal. Rav Soloveitchik then quoted the verse in Tehillim, the Svuna So Ein Mispar, that in God's great wisdom, numbers don't matter. Sometimes a little amount can be something of great significance in halacha. And a second principle in halacha is that in halacha there's a concept called chalipin. One can exchange one item for another item, even though innately they're not worth the same amount. I can take your million-dollar vase, and I'll give you my 5-cent handkerchief. And halacha says, by my giving you that 5-cent handkerchief, and you pick it up, and you've acquired it, that causes an automatic exchange, that the vase now takes the place of the handkerchief, it becomes mine, and the handkerchief takes the place of the vase, the handkerchief becomes yours. Even though one is worth 5 cents and the other is worth $1 million. But in halacha, there's a concept of acquisition called chalipin. I can take one item and exchange it for an item that you have, as long as it's two items. Said Rav Soloveitchik, that's the marvelous kindness of tshuva. The truth is, at the end of Yom Kippur, we say, "V'man nechdal me'oshek yadenu," so that our hands should let loose of theft, of oshek. Why do we say at the end of Yom Kippur our hands should let loose of theft? Because the truth is, every sin is really theft. God gave us life, and He gave us life to use it to serve Him. When we use the life that God gave us to violate His will, we're stealing life, and then we're forfeiting the rights to life. So really, we've forfeited rights to life. Tshuva really means, every sin really means, that we forfeited the rights to life. That's how the Ramban explains the concept of karbanos, the concept of sacrifices. That the sinner has to bring an animal sacrifice, because the animal sacrifice takes the place of the sinner. The sinner, as it were, looks at this sacrifice getting killed, and he has to think, I really should be the one who should be killed on that altar. Really, it's my blood that should be sprinkled. I should have lost my life for this sin. But God in His compassion said, okay, just think that you should have lost your life, and that's already enough to do tshuva. The truth is, every sin really should entail a forfeiture of life. And really, sin is theft of life, the greatest gift that God has given. He's given us life. We've stolen it from Him. What is the process of tshuva? Even though really I should pay a penalty of my life for the sin, God says, you know what, you can do chalipin. You can exchange. Exchange giving up life with giving up something else. And you know what? Even though what you've given up is really not too much, it's a mashahu, even that mashahu counts. Even that little bit counts. So there is a pain within tshuva. There has to be a pain. But the pain of tshuva, the painful process of tshuva, is for our benefit. The painful process of tshuva, that little bit of suffering, that little bit of suffering is chalipin. That's an exchange for the great amount of suffering that we really owed the Almighty. And by undergoing the little suffering, God says that suffering, that's already enough of an atonement. That wipes away the sin. So says Rav Kook, deep down, the whole world is screaming. It's screaming for perfection. And every Jewish soul, within each of us individually, my soul, your soul, the soul is screaming, perfect yourself, improve, do tshuva, return to God. And that's painful to confront the fact that I'm not where I should be. I'm not doing what I should do. I'm wasting time, that I'm not serving God. I'm not fulfilling the mitzvah. It's a painful confrontation. Says Rav Kook, that's a very beneficial confrontation. It's a very beneficial pain. It's like a little salt that goes onto the meat to make the meat taste good. The pain of tshuva, even though it's a little amount, that little amount counts for the whole amount of pain that we really owe, as Rav Soloveitchik explained. And this little pain of going through the process of tshuva, of confronting sin, of regretting sin, that allows for a full purification. Says Rav Kook, Bahagus milin, with the thought of words, I efshar lanu levatei es hamachshava rachavas hashchatim azos. We cannot express the thought that literally spans the heavens. We can't express it. Yichudim anu miyachadim. The truth is, this thought, the whole world is part of tshuva. That's a source of tremendous unifications. B'shemos anu mechavnim. This thought is like thinking about the names of God. Think about this point, nekuda, a single point. Shamayim va'eretz chadashim, a new world, a new heavens, a new earth. Umlo'ehem atzurim sham, and all that's in them are in this little point of tshuva. Oath, in a word, in a letter, olamos misgalim, now the worlds are revealed from this nascent point. Tevos, words, urevavos, Olame ad, tens of thousands of universes, v'hamon yitzurim, and enormous amounts of creations, shalev, peaceful, v'alev, and celebratory, malei chedvas kel elim, filled with the joy of God, who's the source of all powers, malei shalom v'emes, filled with peace and truth. This thought that the whole world is going through tshuva, this is such a unifying thought. It's a pregnant thought. It's a thought filled with new concepts. Looking around the whole world, and the whole world is part of this process. And by thinking this thought, the soul becomes perfected. And I realize that there is a great symphony out there. All of nature is playing a song. And that song is tshuva. That song is improve, come closer to God, develop. What am I going to do? I'm going to start tuning my instrument and stay on the sidelines. I'm going to play off key. I have to join in. I have to join in with all the rest of creation. I have to start singing with them. I have to make sure that I'm also a personality of tshuva. And the individual starts to return.
Suggesting that the rest of the world is because of the example joining in, or is he just suggesting that it's the Jewish people who are in this chorus?
I think he feels the whole world is in this chorus. One of the very great concepts of Rav Kook, his tremendous universalism, such a broad light. Rav Kook felt that men of letters were miniature prophets. He felt that poets, novelists, moral expositors are imbued with the Spirit of God. You don't have to be a Jew to have the Spirit of God cursing through your work. And you may not even, the poet may not even realize that his works of inspiration are furthering the aims of God. In his mind, the poet may have just written this to make some money. He may have written it to become famous. He may have written it for all sorts of nefarious purposes. But God has a special place within the hearts of thinkers and moral individuals, and throughout the whole world, Rav Kook argues, throughout the world, we have to find that godly voice that is demanding ethical perfection, is demanding morality. And even if these people who wrote it are not moral individuals, I have a book at home called Intellectuals by Paul Johnson, where he goes through some of the great intellectuals of Western civilization. He tries to demonstrate how they were such vacuous, hypocritical, horrible individuals that used people. They were liars. They were lazy. Just horrible things about all these great names, whether it's Karl Marx or Shelley or Byron. He really, destroys these people, really just trashes them. And Rav Kook says, that's fine. That doesn't mean that there's no wisdom there. Rav Kook still feels that in their literature and in their poems and in their strident essays calling on man to be moral and ethical and loving and caring, that's the divine truth. This is the divine truth expressing itself, even without their control. So Rav Kook says we need to put on a different set of glasses. We need to put on a set of glasses that sees tshuva everywhere, that sees in everything a great call to return to God. Whether it was known by the writer or unknown by the writer, we need to find that. And we need to say, wow, the whole world is coming closer to God. I need to join in with them. I need to jump in as well and come closer to God. I need to start perfecting myself. Moving on to the second note here, note bet. Says Rav Kook, Al Yidei HaTshuva, through Tshuva, Hakol Shav LeElokus. Everything returns to God. Everything returns to God through Tshuva. What does that mean? Everything returns to God through Tshuva. Here's a suggestion by one of the students of Rav Kook. His name is Rabbi Yaakov Filber. I took this from his book. He wrote a commentary to Oros HaTshuva, and he makes reference to something Rav Kook writes later on in Oros HaTshuva. Rav Kook wrote this in the 11th chapter of Oros HaTshuva. This is the 4th chapter. In the 11th chapter, Rav Kook makes a reference to a famous Kabbalistic concept. The Kabbalah, the secret wisdom of Torah, much of it was revealed by Rabbi Isaac Luria. Rabbi Isaac Luria lived in the 16th century, in the 1500s, in the holy city of Tzfat, in the northern part of Israel. And he revealed tremendous secrets of Kabbalah. One of the famous things that Rabbi Isaac Luria revealed was the story of creation. Rav Yitzchak Luria revealed that the story of creation is one of catastrophe. When God first sought to create the world, so God created an empty space. First there was just God filling everything. God retreated into himself, withdrew, as it were, to create space for a world where he wasn't, so that there could be a world. And into that empty space, God released his essence, released pieces of his essence. He called it lights. The pieces of God's essence, Rabbi Isaac Luria called lights. But since every light needs a vessel, every light needs to be covered in some way. Take, for example, in the physical world, it's very hard to look straight at the sun. We need to have some sort of cover, or many times even in a light bulb. It's hard to look at a light bulb. We need to cover the light bulb with a lampshade. We need to lessen the light to some degree. God covered the lights with vessels. But the vessels couldn't hold the light. The light was too bright. Imagine if you have a light bulb too bright for the lampshade. It's too bright for the lampshade catches fire. In this case, in Rabbi Isaac Luria's symbolic language, the lights were too bright for the vessels, so the vessels collapsed, and they broke, and they shattered. And when the vessels broke, the lights also broke, and the lights scattered throughout. And then after they fell to a lower level, in a lower level they were then reconstituted and brought back together. That's what Rabbi Isaac Luria explained. I mean, obviously we're not going into the depths. There are books and books written about this. This is just, you know, very cursory, just words, the words that he uses. Asks Rav Kook, why was there a shattering? Why couldn't the vessels hold the light? Why did the vessels break? Says Rav Kook, because the lights are the gifts that God gave, pieces of God's essence that he released. When God gives the way the giver wants to give. When the giver gives, he gives in an unlimited way. There are no limits, just giving. But a vessel, by definition, the vessel is limited. A vessel is limited. That's the whole point of the vessel, to limit the light. It's not infinite. It's a limited vessel. It cannot hold unlimited gifts. Take, for example, let's just use a simple parable. Say a person has a plastic cup, wants to fill the cup up with water. So the cup is the vessel, and the water, in our symbolic language, is the light. If a person has unlimited flows of light, unlimited flows of that water, a burst of water, by definition, it's going to break the cup. It's going to tear right through the cup. If there's no limits, just ever-increasing vigor of water, it's going to tear the cup. It tears the cup up. God, when he gave the light, there were no limits. It was God's giving the way God gives. Giving and giving and giving. But the vessel that's getting the light, by definition, is limited. It has its limits, so it can't take the infinite. So it shatters in the face of the infinite. So said Rav Kook, so how could the vessel ever be rebuilt? What does Rav Isaac Luria mean that the vessels were rebuilt? The deeper meaning is, when vessels are shattered, then they are extremely humble. When they are extremely humble, then the truth is they have no limits. They also have no limits. Let's talk about a human being. A human being who's truly humble, who's extremely humble, so then he already has no limits. He can do anything once he's very humble. As we mentioned in earlier weeks, if somebody really has tremendous humility, really fully, fully humble, he's not scared. You know, if a person has a little humility, not tremendous humility, so then he's worried about taking a stand, about saying something, about getting involved in a particular area. Maybe it's going to work out not for the best way. He'll be embarrassed. But if a person has no ego whatsoever, there's no such thing as embarrassment. He just does. There are no limits. If a person really feels extremely humble, extremely lowly before God, then the person has no limits. In a deeper way, if a person feels totally empty, and that I on my own am nothing, then God already fills me fully. And God animates me. If I can't do it, if I surrender to God saying, God, I can't do it, so then God takes over and God does it for me. I can't do it, God. I'm in your hands. So He then does it. He then animates me. When the vessels shatter, when the vessels reach tremendous humility, then the vessels can hold the lights. Because then the vessels become infinite. When the vessels are fully, fully vessels, when the vessels are fully, fully humble, truly empty, totally in God's hands, we're just for you, God, we're in God's hands, then already they can be filled with the lights. Because then they already have no limits. They become infinite. They have no limits anymore. Says Rav Kook, that's really the process, that's the deeper process of the creation of the world. God gave, wasn't in the most perfect way, the vessels weren't the right vessels, they weren't humbled enough, the vessels had their space, their limits, so the vessels shatter, but when the vessels shatter, then they're fully humbled. When they're fully humbled, then they have no limits. When they have no limits, God animates them. Then they can receive the light. Then the vessels can be repaired. The vessels can be built again. Says Rav Kook, that's really the everything in this world. Everything in this world is this great process. Everything in this world is, you know, we start off, however way we start off, and wherever we started off. And usually when we start anything, we're like lights coming into vessels. You have all sorts of great dreams. And then there's a shattering. We confront reality. There's a shattering of the vessels. But when we are humbled and we say, God, it's all your doing. I'm totally in your hands. Then the vessels can be repaired and then there can come success. Imagine someone wants to write a book. So he has a whole dream. He's going to write a book, 15 chapters is what the chapters will say. Then he sits down, he tries to start writing. There's a great shattering of the vessels. Every 2 minutes he's disrupted. This call, that call. Doesn't happen so easily. But if a person gives up, says, you know what, God, I'm in your hands. I'm writing this book for your sake. This is your book. Somehow, this is for you. I'm working for you. Somehow God leads. It'll happen. That's what Rav Kook is teaching. Anything a person does, whatever endeavor someone enters into, whatever project a person takes on, wants to learn a particular book, you know, take on to learn every night for 20 minutes. Oh, the first 2 nights, it's great. Third night already, it's hard to learn for 20 minutes. This call, this need, that need. Rav Kook says that's the shattering of the vessels. That's the breaking of the vessels. Breaking of the vessels means that I haven't been humble enough. Now I have to become truly humble, fully in God's hand. God's going to make this happen, not me. It's going to be God's doing. God, please, I need your help. It's your doing. You know what? God takes over. He makes it happen. It'll be the siyata, the smile, it'll be the help from heaven. It'll all happen. That's the process of tshuva. What is tshuva? God gave us life. Gave us life and said, okay, use life to learn Torah, to fulfill mitzvahs. And then what did I do? It's a shattering of the vessels. I misused that life. There was a shattering. What's the response? The response is to be humbled. Fully humbled. Truly humbled. Person is truly humbled, suddenly God will already take over. God will already bring you back. That's really what Rav Kook is teaching here. Rav Kook is talking about the universal tshuva. What's that idea of universal tshuva? The imagery is that there are, when a person does tshuva, they're being picked up by a wave. Not my own doing. It's a wave that carries me. There's a whole wave of tshuva. I just need to jump in and let myself be carried by that wave and allow myself to be pulled back. It's a perspective of tshuva that focuses on God's role in tshuva. God is bringing the whole world back. The real depth of tshuva is that for me to open myself up to allow myself to be carried by the waves of God's tshuva. And that'll bring me back too. The way God fixes the whole world, the way God made the world with a shattering of vessels and then a healing of the vessels, God will carry me too. If I just humble myself enough and let myself fall into that great cosmic river, that river will carry me towards God, bring me up to the Almighty. I just need to let myself fall in there. I me to allow myself to flow into the spirit of tshuva, into the stream of tshuva. Reading it in Rav Kook, Al Yidei Metzius Koach HaTshuva. That's what he means. Everything returns to God. In other words, everything, the entirety of creation, the vessels, the lights, all of that returns to God through a process of tshuva, through a process of humility. Al Yidei Metzius Koach HaTshuva, through the reality of the existence of tshuva, Hashorer Ba'olamim Kulam, that resides in all the universes, Shav Hakol, everything returns, Umis Kasher, and is attached, B'mitzius Hashleimus Ha'elokis, in the reality of the perfection of God, Ba'al Yedei Hara'ayonos Shav HaTshuva, and through the ideas of tshuva, through De'oseha, through her opinions, V'hargash Oseha, and her feelings, Kol HaMachshavos, all the thoughts, HaRa'ayonos, the ideas, the Hadeos, and the positions, HaRetzonos, the desires, V'HaHargashos, and the sensitivities, Mishapchim, they are all transformed, V'Shavim, and they return, Lihikava Be'etzem Tchunasam, they are returned to be established in the source of their true identity, B'sochen HaKodesh HaEloki, in the holy, godly concept. Everything becomes godly through tshuva. Everything is attached to God. Everything comes back to God. Says Rav Kook now, this is really the theme of the whole chapter, HaTshuva HaKlalis, the general tshuva, Shehi Ilui Ha'olam V'tikuno, which is the elevation of the world and its perfection, the HaTshuva HaPratis, and the individual, private tshuva, HaNogas L'Ishiyus HaPratis Shel Kol Echad V'Echad, that affects each and every individual, Ad Kidei Dakus HaPratim Shel Tikune HaTshuva Yuchadim, all the way down till the details of the individual ways of fixings that are associated with the different types of tshuva. Sharuach HaKodesh, that only the Divine Spirit, Yodea Lefratam Lefratim Hayoser Bodedim, only the Divine Spirit knows how to detail them to all their individual details. Heim Biyachad Tochen Echad. The truth is they are together, one identity. V'chein kol osam tikunei ha-tarbus. That's the point I mentioned earlier. All the corrections of civilization. Rav Kook argues, all the corrections of civilization, all the moral ideas that are produced, however way they're produced, whether they're produced by politicians, or whether they're produced by writers, or novelists, or poets, all of the moral concepts of the entire civilization, it's all part of one great process of tshuva. That's the process of tshuva, that they're all coming from one place, and they're all going to one place. Rav Kook is teaching us that the whole world is doing tshuva. From the beginning of the world, there is tshuva built into the framework of the world, and the whole world is on one great path of tshuva. Beautiful question. Excellent question. So what are you going to ask? According to this idea of Rav Kook, that the world is always improving, so can we really argue that the world is on a higher moral level than the world was, you know, in the times of Moses, in the times of Abraham? Let's say not Abraham. Abraham lived in a pagan society, but in the times of Moses. It's an excellent question. And I think Rav Kook would answer that to some degree, yes. It all depends on your perspective. It's, who know, you know, a Moses in our generation would be unbelievable. But you know, we are weakly souls with weak abilities, and that souls such as ours, with such weak abilities, can reach the moral levels that we are reaching, that's a tremendous improvement from what was. That's a process of tshuva. Rav Isaac Luria was once asked by Rav Chaim Vital, by his student, how can you say that you have a special soul? By even the smallest in the generation of the Tanaim, the generation of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, was greater than you. And Rav Isaac Luria answered, but they didn't live where I live. If I would have lived in that generation, I would have been a great Tana. But I'm not living in that generation. I'm living in this generation. In this generation, when it's so hard to serve God, in this generation, the level that I'm doing, that's already equal to the level that they were doing in their generation. Because in every generation, the souls are weaker. In fact, Rav Kook says, if you look at our generation, there's tremendous chutzpah in our generation. Tremendous insolence, lack of respect for authority, lack of respect for teachers, for educators, for parents, for grandparents, for the elderly, for political, national leaders. The Gemara says that. The Gemara says, before Mashiach will come, chutzpah yazki. There'll be a tremendous growth of chutzpah. So you'll say, that's not a good thing, right? How could Rav Kook be saying that the world is improving when you see this tremendous amount of chutzpah? So Rav Kook addresses this question. He said, you know why there's such a chutzpah? Because the younger generation is demanding a deeper answer. The younger generation is pushing their parents to give them a more compelling answer. The answers of the past don't reach the souls of our generation. Our generation, Rav Kook argues in many of his writings, our generation needs the inner Torah. Our generation needs some of the secrets of Kabbalah. And our children are asking for a deeper answer. They're not satisfied with the simple answer. And that's why there's chutzpah. So it's not because the generation is lowly. It's because the generation's on a higher level. They're looking for the higher truth. That's why they have the chutzpah. That's why they're pushing it. That's why they're, pushing the teachers and pushing the leaders, pushing for an answer. It's really a higher, it's a display of the elevation of the generation, of the improvement of the generation. That's why they're pushing for such deep answers. Because they're not willing to live with such a small answer. They're looking for a deep answer. In fact, the Gaon of Vilna says that the redemption will come through the study of Kabbalah, through the study of the deeper wisdom of Torah. That's written in Evan Shlema. And the Chafetz Chaim writes that a person can never come to true awareness of God without the inner wisdom of Torah, without the inner Kabbalah, the inner secrets of Torah. Rav Kook says, our generation, we're at the cusp of the coming of redemption. Your generation has chutzpah because it's demanding the deeper answers. It's demanding Kabbalah. But it's all because of an improvement. It's all a tremendous improvement. You think about just from the perspective of Kabbalah, the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, maybe this is another answer to your question, the times of Moshe, the Kabbalah was very hidden. Moshe Rabbeinu had the Kabbalah, the Nevi and the prophets had the Kabbalah. But now so much more of it is being revealed, whether through the Hasidic movement or people like Rav Soloveitchik, so many of his drashos were based on Kabbalah, or Rav Kook, or Rav Dessler. So you see the deeper wisdom of Torah, the Torah of Mashiach, that Torah is becoming more revealed. There's a tremendous improvement here. It all depends on what part of the picture you're looking at. You can look at one part of the picture and you say, wow, it's the worst of all times. You look at another part of the picture, it's the best of all times. Rav Kook is saying we need to look at the part of the picture of improvement and realize that the whole world is improving, the whole world is coming closer, the whole world is reaching, is striving, is growing. And our job is to join that symphony. The emotionally, Rav Kook's view of tshuva is that a person surrenders. There could be another way that one views tshuva. Tshuva is the great opportunity for man to assert himself, for man to exercise choice, for man to choose to do right and to say, I can ignore the will of the evil urge. I'm going to choose to do right. But that's not the way Rav Kook is looking at it. Rav Kook is saying tshuva is a choice to jump in and surrender choice, jump in and join the whole world that's constantly progressing and improving, and allow oneself to be dragged along, to be part of that great process of improvement and coming closer to God and serving God and feeling more and more of the closeness of God. Danny, question?
Also, if we're talking about society in general, going back to Moshe's time, the Egyptian society, the societies that were inhabiting Canaan, they weren't tremendous, moralist, humanistic people. But Moshe was, his followers, and even Bnei Yisrael as a whole, they were relatively good. But, so maybe our society, even though every day on the news, but maybe our society has improved.
Yeah, that's what Rav Kook is arguing. He feels that overall the world has improved, and that improvement is part of this undercurrent of tshuva, built into the very fabric of creation, and the shattering of the vessels, and then the repair of the vessels that Rav Isaac Luria taught. That's a process of tshuva. It's a process of coming closer to God, of fixing a mistake, even if in some measure. And that's part of the whole world. The whole world is coming closer to God. The whole world is fixing the great shattering of the sin of Adam. The whole world is improving. The whole world is getting back to the Garden of Eden. And we also have to jump in and join that improvement and allow ourselves to just be there for God, fully humbled, fully observant, fully loyal, fully committed, just rushing after God's will. That's what Rav Kook is advocating.